Welcome to the Work, Wealth, and Travel Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole, and this podcast is your guide to start creating a lifestyle by design. From entrepreneurship, money and finance, taxes and residencies, and everything in between, this show highlights the nuances of a true global citizen lifestyle. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Work, Wealth, and Travel Podcast. I'm so excited to have you on today. We're going to be diving into so many interesting topics. But before we dive in, why don't you share a little bit about yourself, your journey, your story, where you started, and how you got to where you are?
I'm really glad to be here. So just on that note with Work, Wealth, and Travel, I really love the topic of this. So that's, I guess, thinking through my background in those terms, those have been things that have been, of focus in my career. So yeah, I grew up in Silicon Valley area. So around, you know, a lot of the emerging technologies and stuff, but also really seeing the impact of, you know, let's say a boom and bust cycles in emerging technology on other markets, such as the real estate market in California, which, you know, in turn also became very volatile at various points. I guess being very fascinated with markets and how they interact with each other. I also grew up in a very global background where I was Orthodox Christian, which, you know, is various nationalities from North Africa, the Middle East, Central and Eastern Europe, Central Asia. And to that point, was raised speaking a couple of different languages and became really fascinated with the interactions between language groups, between cultures. And I researched in college, I researched bottom-up social movements around the world and how small groups in the private sector could enact social change. And really, I was fascinated with decentralization before I knew that that was a thing, basically. Coming back to after university, I ended up working in technology, privacy, e-commerce, fintech. And really, when you think through that, you know, global initiatives with bottom-up social movements in involving privacy and security, financial technology, global commerce, that's where I really, once I found out about blockchain and crypto almost 7 years ago, I really just never looked back. And so to that point of what I'm looking at now is looking at how to build value for investors and for systems, economic systems across countries through the power of digital assets, and look at how digital assets can help to provide fundamental value, the use cases that they can help solve problems in this world, and how that they can also help to serve as a hedge against volatility in other markets to which they've been historically showing low to no correlation.
I want to start on a very basic level by talking about decentralization. This is a topic that I, like you, find very fascinating. You are probably a little bit more well-versed since this is what you do day in and day out. But, you know, living a what I like to call a global citizen lifestyle, If possible, in an ideal world, I would love as many things as possible to be decentralized. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that is still not fully the world that we live in, especially when you're traveling all the time like I am and you're having to deal with different bank accounts and governments and even centralized crypto exchanges. So talk to me about what is decentralization on a high level and what are some of the pros and cons that you have experienced working so closely with it on a daily basis?
And thinking through an example of decentralization versus centralization. So a centralized system is most of the mobile and desktop applications that we use today, you know, including, let's say, you know, Facebook, Amazon, Google. A lot of their data is stored in central warehouses or data repositories, where the advantage is that you can have in certain ways, faster time to access data. But disadvantage is that there's a single point of failure. So that'd be one example where if there's an attack on a corporate server farm, and then let's say that farm needs to be shut down, then there's no other way to access that data. So that would be an example of a centralized system. Decentralized, for example, using that data storage and data access use case, decentralized systems would involve having a peer-to-peer network where, in order to shut down the transfer of data, you would have to essentially remove all the computers, all the servers, all the devices from that entire network to fully eliminate the availability of transferring the data. So that's an advantage. A disadvantage is that a lot of these systems, at least in their current form, tend to be decentralized systems can be a bit slower. So this comes down to the question of priorities of, you know, optimizing for speed versus for security and other factors. So to that point, though, I think it does raise a larger question, which is that not everything is something that blockchain, crypto, digital assets, Web3 is going to solve. Just like, you know, you have different tools for different jobs, right? So to that point, a couple of important areas to note. For example, there was an interesting infographic somewhat recently. I think it was by the Boston Consulting Group, BCG. And it was this kind of helpful flowchart of, should you incorporate a Web3 or blockchain component into your product or service? And there were a couple of different decisioning trees around that. Or another thing to think through would be, let's say, the role of digital assets in investment, where digital assets can serve certain good functionalities, but they also have some limitations. So in that regard, I think it's a question on the more product and service side of identifying what are the goals of a project and how can blockchain, Web3, et cetera, help to achieve those goals? And is there going to be significant value provided by engaging? And on an investment side would be a question of what role can any individual asset class play in building out an overall kind of picture of financial health for an individual investor or for an institution. So on the investment side, lastly, that would be kind of where our approach is that we believe that digital assets can serve as a hedge against volatility in other markets and other asset classes, and where essentially digital assets are special just like any other asset class. So there are some folks out there who will say, oh, you know, Bitcoin is going to replace all currencies or stuff like this. That's not our thesis. Our thesis is that digital assets in general can help to solve for certain jobs, do certain jobs better than other currencies or other asset classes. And that also they can help to build wealth as a piece of a larger puzzle.
So in you saying that piece specifically at the end, I'm curious, which digital aspects right now, and I'm sure this is probably always changing, are you more bullish on to increase decentralization, to maybe become, you know, one of the currencies of the future? If we take it that far, maybe not that far quite yet. But what do you see? You're doing this every single day, you're in this space. What do you see that are some of the digital assets that you see, and what are the benefits of them that potentially some other assets don't have?
Yeah, so that's an important question. So there are over 23,000 digital assets out there right now, specifically fungible tokens, cryptocurrencies, that sort of thing. So that's not even factoring in other use cases such as real asset tokenization or even NFTs necessarily. But to that point, there's a lot more than just Bitcoin. But at the same time, not all of these 23,000 plus currencies are going to, you know, last 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, what have you. So thinking through that, there are a couple of ways to look at that. So to your question, I mean, in order for any of these to have some real legs to them, some staying power, they're going to be needing to solve a use case, a practical use case, right? So for example, there's the use case of store of value, that especially Bitcoin has become very popular as a store of value. Comparatively, there may be other currencies out there that could do a better job of being used for high frequency, low volume transactions, like, you know, going and buying bread at the grocery store. You may not want to wait, you know, 5 or 10 minutes until the transaction has finalized because you're on your way, right? That use case may end up being solved by one or more other cryptocurrencies, digital assets. There's also the use case we were mentioning earlier of decentralized file storage, where there may end up being more kind of a specialized type of use case there. So thinking through it, I mean, I think a common analogy is to the, you know, the dot-com boom and to the subsequent, you know, unicorns, billion-plus-dollar companies that came out of that, where you have, for example, you know, you'll have, say, within the social networks category, there are a couple that have really carved out a niche, or within the search engine category, there are, you know, a couple, but it's largely, you know, one that's really dominated, right? And I think that will likely continue to happen in the crypto space as well, where there are kind of broader market categories where there will be a couple of different key players that have carved out smaller niches in those general categories. And then the rest may not have as much staying power. So that ultimately probably means that at the end of it, that a very significant portion of the market will end up being dominated by, let's say, 100 or so players.
I know that there are, so I don't even know how many thousands of, you know, altcoins there are out there. But, and, you know, of course, other digital assets as well. But I do know that most of them won't survive or don't really have a fully practical application. There's so much we could dive into on that. But I want to go into the topic of, I'm kind of on this topic, but as a sovereign global citizen, how can you utilize, or how can any sovereign global citizen utilize blockchain, utilize digital assets, utilize everything that we have talked about so far to really ensure a sovereign future for themselves? And what could that look like increasingly in the future with more digital assets that would really be able to help in accomplishing this? What does that look like now, and what could that look like in the future as this continues to be built out?
Yeah, there are a couple of different answers to that. One of them maybe is kind of a bit of a bridge between the last question and this one, which is the approach of responsibly investing into digital assets in a climate where not all of them will succeed and not all of them will succeed to the same level, right? So thinking through something like investing in stocks, if you're interested in investing in stocks, most people will on an intuitive basis as at this point know that they shouldn't just go find whatever stock is number one out there and throw all their eggs into that basket. But they also intuitively know to some extent that they shouldn't just find something that just IPO'd and put all their eggs into that basket either, right? And when you look at more kind of disciplined, systematic approaches to investing and managing wealth in these more traditional asset classes, you'll see, let's say diversification across, you know, blue chip, you know, medium cap, low cap, assets. You'll see diversification across, you know, different geographics. You'll see also, you know, different markets, such as, you know, let's say an allocation to, you know, bank stocks versus tech stocks, that sort of thing, right? And very similarly, that's the approach that we look to take in managing wealth and in investing in the digital asset space. So that's one area where essentially to your point, there is this huge opportunity for growth in a space, but it also needs to be approached with responsible and systematic approaches, just like in any other asset class. But beyond that, the roles that it can play in terms of thinking through, you know, global investment and going where you're treated best in the market, for example, a couple of things. Firstly, digital assets have routinely shown low to no correlation with a whole range of other asset classes. Has often shown low correlation to the stock market, the bond market, the real estate market, even has shown low correlation pretty consistently to the gold market, which is interesting because crypto, Bitcoin, are very often kind of called digital gold. And there's this kind of false equivalency between the kind of job that gold can do versus the job that, that crypto can do. But the overall point is that investing a portion, a manageable portion of an overall portfolio into digital assets can help to smooth things out when you are seeing globally situations in various markets like the stock market or the bond market. Because when that has happened historically, such as in COVID, when stocks got hit really hard, Bitcoin and many other cryptos got hit a lot less, or at points where the real estate market has gotten hit really hard. Also, these have in some cases been points where there's actually been a huge kind of upward swing in the crypto market. So that correlation, that low to no correlation, and kind of harnessing that is one area. Another area in terms of kind of global diversification would be that from our perspective, what we're looking to do is to work within digital asset frameworks that have clear guidelines on what wealth managers, what investors can and can't do, both from a overall kind of markets regulatory standpoint and from a digital asset specific standpoint. So that's where we have decided to be working with Cayman Islands based vehicles, where Cayman is hands down the number one location for overall location into alternative asset funds as an overall, let's say, outside of the US type of basis. And so in that regard, I think it brings up a larger point of preparing for the fluctuations in regulatory climates in various countries where there's starting to be certain changes for better in some cases, for worse in others, in various jurisdictions around the world. But in a climate, regulatory and infrastructural climate like Cayman, there has been very clear and kind of consistently developing guidelines on what ways that investors are protected and ways that opportunities for digital asset investments are supported. And so that to us is one of the areas of answer to that question of going where you're treated best.
I am such a proponent of going where you are treated best. And so I love that you have established the business somewhere where you know it's going to be beneficial for yourself and for the clients that you serve. So now I could loosely compare your fund to, and I know you did kind of compare this similarly off air to what would be like a hedge fund. So just so that somebody can put it into perspective, a hedge fund, but for digital assets. But my question when you were speaking that I was thinking was, let's say we hear people say all the time, whether it's going to be true or not, whether you believe it's true or not, this can be completely subjective, that gold is safe. And crypto, some people will say, you know, there are a lot of proponents who will say crypto is safe. Crypto is the future, especially if you're talking Bitcoin, Ethereum. But there's a lot of people out there who say that, no, it doesn't really hold the value that it's worth, and invest in gold and, you know, have diversified investments. But of course, gold is a great one. So what would you say to somebody who has this viewpoint on kind of, you know, the physical, tangible, the gold, or even the investments, the stocks, the ETFs, the bonds are what you need to be investing in, but maybe not quite so technologically advanced, or just not understanding the technology that digital assets and blockchain and decentralization can bring?
Yeah, well, that's a kind of a bit of a can of worms of multiple sub seams, I guess. So we'll try and maybe touch on at least a couple of them in the time we have. But so, yeah, there are a couple of areas. I mean, firstly, kind of alluding back to some things I was saying earlier, you know, I'm not here to tell anyone do this, don't do that, from, or to say this asset class is good and this asset class is bad. Overall, really, you know, diversification and proper risk management have been, you know, key markers of success. And that means not just diversifying within a specific asset class, but also diversifying across asset classes. So, you know, let's say someone who, if you're talking precious metals, that could mean, you know, having a bit of a position in gold as well as silver, maybe, you know, some platinum, et cetera, right? Or it could also mean in a gold or in a precious metals type of station, having, you know, let's say some of this stored at home, but some of this stored in a vault in in one country and others stored in a vault in another country. So just in general, diversification and proper risk management and proper risk mitigation, both in a specific asset class and across asset classes, is I think just really important. Tying into that, a lot of mainstream institutional analysts, a lot of the news lately, have been seeing articles about this in Wall Street Journal, various other places, are starting to indicate that people are increasingly very, let's say, uneasy with a traditional kind of stocks bonds allocation as something that's going to breed success automatically. I think this is the case for a number of different reasons, but for one thing, the level of value that the stock market has been able to capture from a like IPO onwards sort of a basis has on average gone down, where a lot more growth has been happening pre-IPO compared to in past decades. And so just the ability for also in this current market, a lot of the stock market has been acting in kind of a very tight correlation with itself, where there have been a lot of assets that have just been having the exact same behaviors. So overall, I think that a lot of sophisticated investors are starting to realize that having a bit of an allocation into various alternative assets, which can include things like precious metals, as well as digital assets, and maybe also fine art or various others, that this can provide a hedge against volatility in the market. Relatedly, when you're specifically talking about an emerging asset class like digital assets, where it has only been around for a little bit of time, the value of something like that specifically is the asymmetric upside, where if, for example, for easy math, if you have $100 million in a bank account or like $100 million net worth, if you were to say put 5% of that, $5 million into emerging asset classes such as the digital asset class, the level of growth potential of that is astronomical, whereas the level of downside is fairly minimum, where even if it went to zero, which, you know, looking at analysts from, you know, various investment banks and hedge funds, et cetera, is very unlikely. But even if it went to zero, you would still have, you know, most of the rest of your wealth allocated into more traditional asset classes. But if it does continue on anywhere near the level of growth trajectory that it has shown for the last 10 plus years, you could be seeing a scenario where you're getting that overall net worth much, much, much bigger. So that's another way of thinking about it. And I mean, back to that, the risks needing to be managed, lastly, on that topic, you know, thinking through what that looks like. There's been a big trend in the space for proper custody of these assets, where firstly, having audits in place is really big, where if a lot of these organizations that kind of fell into hot water over the last year or two in the digital asset space, if they had actually had, if they'd had limits on the amount of leverage they could use, or if they had had really routine, top-notch third-party audits in place from the get-go, we would not have been in this same type of, let's say, negative sentiment around digital assets that we are right now. So thinking through that, really big areas in the space to be watching out for many, many players are making sure that the risk in the form of leverage especially is minimized. Also that there's transparency on audit information, and that there's also clear systems in place for things like succession management of what happens to someone's crypto if, let's say, you know, what happens to your crypto if you pass away? How does your family get access to that? Or if a team, let's say if one team member is not available, how do you have systems in place where other team members can make urgent decisions in such a way that doesn't open up other vulnerabilities? So these are patterns to think about, as well as questions to address from an overall level.
We could dive so deep into that, but I'm just on a very light level curious your quick opinion on Yeah, you know, most of these exchanges are held in the US for better or for worse. I don't know what that'll look like in the future. But it seems with what we have seen in the last few years, and especially extending back, you know, a few decades, the US lacks a lot of, and I don't know if this is changing. I assume it probably isn't, but I would hope it is, a lot of regulation for these organizations and these custody holders for coins. So do you see that changing in the future? Do you see other countries maybe coming in? You know, I don't know what that would look like because a lot of Americans are investing in these digital assets. So maybe it's easier if it is an American exchange to invest within an organization in your own country. But what do you see that looking like just really quickly in the future? And where do you see that going?
Yeah. So there are certain functionalities of things you can or can't invest into, or ways that you can or can't invest into them, that are increasingly becoming limited on a jurisdiction by jurisdiction basis. There's also increasing push for regulation on, you know, a country by country basis, including in the US, as well as in other, let's say, more kind of transnational types of organizations, including in the EU, among others. In terms of what that's likely to continue to, ways in which that's likely to continue to develop, there are a couple of key areas. One is that the US, for better or worse, will continue to be a bit of a bellwether, where countries will often react to what happens in the US, either react with it or react against it. Say, hey, saying something like, hey, this is what the US is doing, so let's follow suit and do something similar. Or this is what the US is doing, we have a different set of priorities, and therefore we're going to cater to a different demographic and open up other business opportunities by kind of defining our regulatory protocols kind of in contrast to the United States. So yes, I think that the US will continue to see more regulatory development, and that will influence global regulatory development, be it from a imitation standpoint or a kind of a trust standpoint.
I hope that day comes sooner than later, but with governments, you know, being the ones who are kind of in control of a lot of this, along with the companies, who knows what will happen with that in the time frame. So there's a lot that we could talk about in this discussion. Is there anything that's of importance that has not been brought to light yet within this discussion that you would like to?
Well, so to that theme of work, wealth, and travel, something that we ultimately are looking to do is to help provide be part of a global platform that can add value from a global level to individuals that are of various nationalities, to individuals that are of maybe multiple nationalities as well. But to that point, a couple of relevant areas. Firstly, we, as our digital asset investment fund operator or fund advisory group, CKC, we are part of a larger network where we function in tandem with other alternative asset investment fund advisors in asset classes like fine art or real estate in emerging markets, or let's say civil and social development in places like the Ukraine or in Haiti. And so thinking through that, we're looking at what are ways from a very tangible basis in which digital assets can help to facilitate other investment use cases, where, you know, certainly there's the kind of active management of you know, a diversified and active or diversified basket of assets is the area that we talked about. But beyond that, there's also the question of, you know, how can crypto help kind of provide more value on a global level? So, for example, through cross-border payments and cross-border investments, a relevant example being that donations as well as investments into Ukraine over the last year or two, around 10 to 15% of those have been in the form of digital assets, cryptocurrencies, where because these are coming from around the world and also being deployed around an economic situation that is in flux, to put it mildly, digital assets and the decentralized nature of that infrastructure has been of advantage to supporting initiatives in Ukraine as well as in other areas of the world. Beyond that, thinking through also the ability to move assets around on a global level, the other reason why we work within a network is that individuals within that network have been able to move assets between different asset classes. So to move from a position, let's say in digital assets, into a position in fine art or in real estate. And so thinking through that in terms of that is all something that is supported by a blockchain or a decentralized network. That is another area of thinking about as a global project or global investor, that a digital infrastructure, decentralized infrastructure can help provide liquidity, not just of, you know, needing to buy or sell a specific asset and, you know, to purchase a house or what have you, but also to move between asset classes to react appropriately to these various market fluctuations that are happening on a global level. And beyond that, another area in which we are focused on providing a network of professional and wealth building opportunities on a global level is that we are part of an enterprise group that helps to organize a variety of events in Davos, Switzerland every January. And so this is a situation where every January, around 40,000 people from around the world come to talk about global events, to network, to develop lasting partnerships, and to create value for and with each other. And this is something where we as a group look to provide that to our network, to our partners, where this can be a scenario in which people can get invaluable insights into when you are talking with people from around the world that are operating at high levels. You can get insights into what's happening within a specific asset class like digital assets, but also what's happening across other asset classes, across other industries, and how those pieces work together. So that's one way in which global collaboration is something that we are very supportive of and very active in.
I absolutely love that. So one quick last question as you were speaking that came to mind, and I'm sure this varies depending on the country, but you mentioned, I'm curious the tax implications of sending assets across borders. So you mentioned Ukraine as an example, maybe even some developing countries. Are there, and maybe these countries don't even have the established tax implications yet. I don't know what that looks like in every single country, but what does that look like from your standpoint? Is that something that you help clients deal with? And what does that look like?
Yeah. So, well, it's an important question, requires a disclaimer that anything I'm going to say here is not tax advice, legal advice, financial advice, and each person's situation is going to be, you know, unique. And so please do, you know, if before making any major decisions, do talk with, you know, your accountant, your lawyer, qualified professional in those areas. But directionally speaking, there are a couple of relevant areas. So for one thing, overall, Cayman Islands is, you know, in addition to having clear regulatory framework around hedge funds and clear regulatory framework around digital assets, is also a tax neutral destination. So in that sense, most fund vehicles in Cayman do not pay taxes, which at a fund level can mean that an organization doesn't need to be as worried about the implications of making any one trade. So for example, in a situation like crypto, in some jurisdictions, individuals who do need to pay taxes need to think about taxes on a trade-by-trade basis. So going from dollars, for example, into Bitcoin, then also going from Bitcoin into, let's say, Ripple, and then, you know, let's say from Ripple back into euros or what have you. Each of those could potentially be a taxable event. Whereas at an institutional level, many organizations in Cayman do not need to be concerned with those issues at an organizational level. And then whatever that translates to, of if an investment is, let's say, coming back to an individual in a country, they're of course going to be, you know, responsible for their country's tax considerations and laws. But the level to which that can free things up logistically to really focus on what is going to drive the most value in terms of trading and investment decisions at an organizational level. That is one area where we found it came in to be of advantage. Beyond that, that's another theme of going where you're treated best. And that can really differ, you know, in terms of country of origin and or country of residence and stuff like this. But there are a lot of different ways to focus on compliantly and legally maximizing the upside of various systems. So I think that in any scenario can become important, where when there are rules in place for you can do this and you can't do this, it's because that's also supporting broader economic activity. And so understanding the rules of the game and playing within those rules to your best advantage is something that I think a lot of people, you know, will want to be thinking about.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I love that you have set your business and the structure up in a way that is beneficial for taxes. I guess it really depends on who you are remitting that currency or the digital assets back to. Then maybe that falls on them as well.
Yeah, so there are a lot of complexities to be considering, but in many cases, depending on the individual's origin or current residence or both, there could be or could not be some advantages to, for example, investing into Cayman corporations. In other cases, though, it could not be the right decision. So that's something very personal. But beyond that, our standpoint has just been, you know, aside from potential advantages in that arena, that Cayman has much clearer regulatory oversight, has much stricter requirements on investor protections for hedge funds, private hedge funds, especially, than a lot of other jurisdictions around the world. And that's where to us, you know, if you are thinking through something where there's same or comparable return upside or tax considerations, even if they're about the same in that regard, but way better in a investor protection standpoint, then that's something to pay attention to.
Amazing. Well, thank you for this discussion. This has been very insightful. So where can listeners find you online?
Yeah, I appreciate you hosting this convo as well, Nicole. So yeah, I'm fairly active on LinkedIn. My URL is David Ambrose Doss in LinkedIn. And you can also reach out to me and my team via email. So that would be info@ckc.fund. We also have a newsletter if you'd like to keep in the loop on some of the market insights and other activity in the digital asset space. So you could find that newsletter on CKC Fund's LinkedIn page. And if you're interested in any of the online or in-person wealth and professional community events that we have, you could also go to digitaldavos.app and would love to speak with you there as well and potentially see you at a future event.
You've just listened to the Work, Wealth, and Travel podcast. If anything from this episode resonated with you, I would appreciate if you share this podcast on your socials. And of course, be sure to tag me. And don't forget to leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you for joining me on this global citizen journey, and I'll see you in the next episode.